Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUT-TV. I'm Harold Fisher. This is Ask the Lawyer. My guests are attorney Deborah Boddy, legal and planning and will expert. Also from the law office of Deborah D. Boddy, attorney Marlon Griffith, owner and principal litigator with the Griffith Law Group, and criminal defense attorney Bobby Henry. He, of course, is with the Henry Legal Firm. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were talking to Deborah about how to prevent your family from losing a home after the owner passes away. Deborah, please continue your thoughts on that.
Thank you. So sure. If I can just finish up my thought with regard to reverse mortgages. So reverse mortgages, again, are a great tool. But upon the death of the owner, you have, according to your agreement with the mortgage company, first, you have 6 months in order to try to get the affairs together. And there are times when they will extend it beyond 6 months to about a year. But in any event, you have to do one or two things. You either have to pay off that mortgage or you have to sell the property. Now, you know, the average home in the District of Columbia, I'm also a real estate broker as well. And so, you know, from that perspective, the average home in the District of Columbia is around $650. So if someone has tapped out a lot of the equity out of their home, then the family members who are left behind now have to come up with that balance. Let's say they tapped out $500,000. So now the children who are left behind, or the spouse, and not the spouse, but the children, have to now come up with $500,000. Well, that's not always an option. And because that's not an option, and there may be one or more people who will inherit, they now have to figure out what to do. So typically the property is sold, or frequently the property is sold.
Yeah.
Now, properties are also being lost to tax sales.
Yes, absolutely.
And so if I may, I just want to say something about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Once a mortgage has been paid off, now the taxes have to be paid directly. Prior to that, the mortgage company would take a little piece of it every month and would put it towards the taxes and insurance. But once the mortgage is paid off, which is usually the case after about 30 years and for most of our parents, the taxes have to be paid directly. Well, if those taxes aren't paid, then the city will begin to assess a tax bill. And before you know it, the tax bill is such that it's difficult to pay. Now, I have this one case wherein the family did not pay the homeowner's insurance. The property caught fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Unfortunately, one of the parents died in the fire, and two of the siblings were injured. Now, they have a burned-out property in a very expensive area of the city, and they have no way of fixing it, no way of repairing it.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot to think about. And again, all of this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is making sure, whether it's wills, trusts, making sure all of your ducks are in a row, and something that people have to pay attention to. Because if they don't, you could end up, as Deborah was just sharing with us, in a very difficult situation, because you just don't know. I need to go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Monique, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Monique. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
I wanted to ask a question about a front foot benefit, oftentimes referred to as deferred water and sewer utility. Is it enforceable if it has not been filed with Maryland land records?
Okay, forgive me, because I didn't get that question. Bobby, I think you did hear that. What is she asking?
She's asking about the front foot benefit, and she's saying that it's normally a water and sewer charge. And I believe the end of your question was, is that enforceable if it has not been filed?
Correct. Is it enforceable if it has not been filed by Maryland Land Records?
It should be filed in the records. There is an easement that should have gone on there. So are you talking about the easement portion of it, or are you talking about the actual lien from the front foot benefit? Because if the lien has not been filed, then it can still be enforceable, but it's the order of precedent.
So let me stop you. For those of us in this room who got their law degree from a Cracker Jack box, what did you just say? and Monique, what did you just say? Because you got to break it on down.
We can
for
break
me.
That all
yeah,
the way down.
Break it all the way down.
All
please.
The way down. Liens are nothing but to say you owe someone something. Okay. Normally, when you buy a house, there's a lien for the mortgage. Okay, surrounding your house, there's usually utilities that are running in. You know that little strip of grass that runs between the sidewalk and the street?
Yes.
That's typically an area where there are easements. And an easement is a right for the utility company or some other entity to come onto that property and to do certain things. Now, they have to file notice of that. So they put they have to create that easement, that right, and it's filed in court in the land records. Now, if it is not filed in court with the land records in time, and say they wait 2 or 3 years, well, then somebody else may come up and they may lien that particular piece of land. Now, theirs would be superior to any other easement, whether it's a front foot benefit, whether it's a utility easement or what have you. So it goes by your order of precedence. So it's like having one mortgage. You've heard of people taking out a second mortgage. Well, the second mortgage can't trump the first mortgage because the first mortgage was there what? First. You may have a second or a third.
Say first in line, first in right.
That is correct. And that's exactly what happens with the front foot benefit if it hasn't been filed, because all they'll do if they learn that it wasn't filed, they'll go file it.
Okay. Monique, I hope that helps you.
Yes, and I'm hoping the attorneys will also leave their contact information.
Yeah, the information the information will be posted on our website on whur.com under Ask the Lawyer. I will be posting that after 9 o'clock tonight.
Okay, perfect. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much. Oh, and by the way, Monique, after this conversation with you, I will be taking the bar exam. So thank you. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dan calling from Maryland. Dan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much. I will be moving my mother-in-law in her close to 80s from Pennsylvania to Maryland for health reasons very soon. And so what do I need to be asking? Transferring from her from another state into this state. She's got limited amount of money. But nevertheless, what should I be thinking about? Thank you.
Deborah, any thoughts about that?
Yes, and I am so glad you asked this question, because this gives me an opportunity to talk about things that we should be doing outside of a will, right? Because the will is for when you die, but there are so many things that should be done prior to death. One of the first things is a medical power of attorney. This is a document or tool that can be used to help you navigate your mother's health care, where she's going to live, what kind of treatment she'll get from her doctors. And so you want to have a medical power of attorney. It can be as detailed as she would like. I mean, obviously, you would be the one being appointed as her agent, but she would have to be the one to actually set it up. So one of the first things I would ask is, does your mother still have capacity? Capacity and competence are two different things. And so capacity is, can she receive and evaluate information such that she can make her own decision. So she has capacity, then she can have these documents prepared, making you or whoever she chooses her agent. The other thing that you want to look at is a financial power of attorney. A medical power of attorney won't do what a financial power of attorney will do, and vice versa. So the financial power of attorney will allow you to, for instance, prepare her taxes for 2023 and to submit those to the IRS, to go to the bank, to even change beneficiaries if that's something that she wants to do. So I think that's a very good question, and I think you're very smart to be looking at that now and thinking ahead.
Okay. Dan, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to move on. Leon, we're going to talk to you from Maryland in just a bit. But I do want to move on, and I don't think you have to be an expert in this particular issue, but I am interested in hearing your opinions about this. As we saw, this made the headlines just yesterday, where a former Montgomery County public school teacher is accused of having sex with a student when that student was 14 years old. That teacher is a woman, and the student is male. She was 22 years old. Melissa Curtis is her name. This allegedly happened back in 2015. She was arrested, and we still don't know what her bond status is. But one of the things that certainly has been concerning about this, and maybe I'll have Deborah comment on this first. She has not been convicted, obviously, but some of the comments about that we've seen on social media are in reference to why this person is only coming forth now, some 8 years later. We don't know what impact, if indeed this indeed happened. We don't know what kind of psychological impact this has had on him. But, you know, the bottom line is that if this were a man who had committed these kinds of crimes and were convicted of such, he would be under the jail if the student were male or female. And the reason I bring this up because, and here's my law and order part, because there is case law regarding this, a very high profile case that happened also in 2015 in Delaware. Molly Shattuck was convicted of third degree rape, unlawful sexual contact with the minor, giving alcohol to a minor who was 15 years old. She pled guilty and was sentenced to 48 weekends in jail. Deborah, I'll start with you. We know that whether it's third degree rape, unlawful sexual contact, again, if this were a man in the Shattuck case and the 15-year-old was a girl, there wouldn't have been 48 non-consecutive weekends, I might add, in jail. He would have been in prison. What's going on here, Deborah? Your thoughts about that?
Well, let me first, disclaim my comments by saying I'm not a criminal attorney.
Right.
I am a mother of a 45-year-old daughter and a 8-year-old grandson and a 21-year-old granddaughter. This is just wrong. It's wrong. It doesn't matter who's doing it. It doesn't matter who the perpetrator is. We send our children to school for education and protection. This is just wrong. Any child who has been a victim of this kind of activity would most likely have some long-standing issues as a result. So I would say it doesn't matter the sex of the perpetrator. And I think that, you know, whether man or woman, the teacher, they should all be treated harshly and severely for this kind of activity.
Yeah. Marlon, your thoughts about this?
Well, I am not going to rush the judgment. I don't know enough about the details of this case. I don't think it's going to turn on whether the quote-unquote perpetrator is a man or woman. I mean, obviously, the alleged victim is a minor at the time. So legally, they cannot consent to having sex with an adult. But I think the one thing we do in society that we shouldn't do is when someone is accused, and depending on the type of accusation, we rush to that judgment and we say they should be put onto the jail, right? Because of the type of the accusation. And we don't know anything about what the case is about. We don't know anything about what the evidence is. And a lot of people's lives have been ruined because they've been accused of such things. And then when months go by or a year go by and the case goes away, no one reports, oh, that case was thrown out or the case goes away. But that person's life has still been ruined.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are also so focused on what the accusation is. Now, accusation is proven to be true. If a person is convicted, let it be what it is. But I just think we just have to be careful when we're so quick, without the evidence, and to rush to judgment.
And to your point, in this particular case, as local as this story is, this story has become international news. People Magazine is reporting on it. Newsweek is reporting on it. The accused, a lot of the comments have come in because she is considered attractive. And that also has bolstered this, you know, this media attention. But whether she's attractive or not, even going back to the Molly Shattuck case back in 2015, you know, Bobby, when it comes to and this was indeed, this did happen. This was not an accusation. She did plead, in addition to paying restitution to the family and everything else. Is there a double standard when it comes to women who are accused of these kinds of crimes?
I don't believe so anymore. In no matter what area of the law that you have, there are cases that are on the fringe. Like you mentioned the Molly Shatner case.
Shattuck,
that case. Well, I was just reading a case this week out in Wisconsin where the perpetrator was a 75-year-old teacher. She was just sentenced to 10 years for having an affair, a sexual encounter on numerous occasions with a 14-year-old. And so, you know, you look at that case and you say, wow, compare that to the Shattuck case. They're just night and day. And that reinforces the points that were made earlier. And you have to know the facts. You have to know the facts surrounding the case. In the state of Maryland, for instance, with the teacher who was 22 at the time, look at her charges. She was charged with third-degree sex offense and fourth-degree sex offense. Third-degree sex offense, if convicted, that's 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
If she gets convicted on the fourth-degree sex offense, that's less time. But, you know, the court is going to take into consideration all the factors. The majority of these cases actually don't go to trial. They don't go to trial.
As in the Shattuck case, she pled.
Absolutely. And because you plead, the court takes that into consideration. Why? Because you are acknowledging responsibility for your acts. But then the court has to do something because it has to send a message to society. And they also have to protect society from someone like yourself who commits, not you, Harold, but someone like the Molly Shattuck of the world. You have to protect 14-year-olds from them. It's interesting that all of these people are 14 years old. I'll just say this as a quick aside, and that is the number one armed carjackers in the DMV are 14-year-olds.
Age of consent in Maryland is
think it's 16.
16. 16. And I think that's really the other point, that even if an alleged victim voluntarily participated, if that alleged victim is under the age of 16, the law says that they still cannot consent.
That's correct.
You were about to say something, Deborah. I'm sorry, I didn't let you speak.
No. I was actually agreeing with Attorney Griffin, is that you do have to have all of the evidence in order to form a cogent opinion about this. But again, I am stuck on the point that we have a minor who is being who an adult is engaging in sexual conduct. The fact that they're a minor, I think for me, that closes the door to anything else.
Yeah,
may have consented, but it really closes the door because they are a minor.
I respectfully disagree. It doesn't close the door because, you know, as males, you see this all the time. And actually women, if they agree with it, there are some young ladies out here that will be 14 years old and look like they're 21 or 25. And I understand what she's going to say. But having tried one of these cases, I do understand what the court takes into consideration. And when you get these perpetrators, and again, it could be cases that are on the fringe, but when you get these young women, some parents allow their children to act and dress and conduct themselves a lot older than they actually look. Unfortunately, it is still a crime. The gentleman still got charged. However, the charge was reduced from third degree to fourth degree. That is a huge difference. Why is that? Because at fourth degree, you're not required to report as a sexual offender. So if you are in fact 22 years old, the girl is 15 years old, you don't spend the rest of your life suffering from that mistake because you were lulled into that. And clearly, the judge agreed that this gentleman was lulled into that by the 15-year-old.
Let me just say that under the circumstances under which that I don't believe, Bobby, that would be a valid argument is if you are a teacher and the victim is a student.
The law separates that, Harold. It does.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And exactly. That. Yeah. I don't care how tall she is, how she's built, or how she dresses. If I'm a teacher and you are a middle school student,
hands off.
You already know.
Hands off.
You already. Hands off. Yeah. You hands off. Yeah. I don't care.
And can I just say this one thing?
Sure.
Appearance, whether it's dress, whether it's, you know, attitude or whatever it is, that is not an invitation or a license to unwanted sexual conduct.
Yeah. It's consent. It's consensual. It was never a question about it being unwanted.
Attorney Henry, I agree with you with regard to the consent, but I'm just saying, I just want to address some other, you know, statements that have been made, that whatever a woman wears, however she presents, no is no and yes is yes.
Yeah.
And so none of those things are licenses to unwanted conduct.
No. This is not someone being preyed upon. These are individuals that are going out looking for this. But then once they got quote unquote caught,
yeah,
9 months later, they had to confess and come forward who it was.
And I will also say allegedly in this most recent case, again, this was a teacher and this was a student. In the Molly Shattuck case, the victim was a friend of her 15-year-old son. They went to high school together. So again, obviously she played because she did not get a pass, and she did have to register as a sex offender. And the reason I bring up this old case is just for context. I do want to get back to the phone lines. Leon You have a, I think you have another question for Deborah. Go right ahead, Leon.
Hey, Herb, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing right. I'm doing just fine. I need you to get closer to the phone, please.
I'm here now.
There we go.
Now? All right. Okay. Let me take my call first.
Sure.
And I was calling about the trust. The young lady talk about the trust tonight.
Trust. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I have a power of attorney, and I have a will. Would be advising me to get a trust also, because I'm 73 years old. I have a business and property and all that. But I don't understand the trust.
Real quick, Deborah, your thoughts about what Leon is asking.
Yeah.
There it is.
Okay.
There you go, Leon.
You said lawyers can't be sure. Thank you, Deborah.
So you do need a trust, Leon, especially in light of the fact that you have a business, you have a home. It just makes for a more orderly transition of your business. And by the way, for your business, you also need a succession plan. Who's going to run that business when you're no longer able to, or when you're no longer here? How does it transfer? Does it end with you? And Harold, I would implore you to have another session like this on legacy planning, because Leon has brought to light just one of those things that we have begun to talk about more. It's what will your legacy be?
Yeah.
And what will happen once you're no longer here? So the answer is yes.
There you go, Leon.
Thank you.
Short and sweet. Another case, and we're down on time, and this is another criminal case that that is unfortunately very shocking. This came to light over the weekend. A U.S. Park police officer is accused of involuntary manslaughter in the shooting of one of his colleagues. The Fairfax County Police are reporting that he was drinking and dry firing a handgun, not a service pistol, but a handgun that he owned, thinking that it was unloaded, and he shot and killed his colleague. Terribly, terribly unfortunate. And there's so many places that we can go with this. Obviously, we know, you know, that alcohol and firearms do not mix. I've taken a gun safety class. Every time you pick it up and put your hand on it, just because you think it's unloaded, you still have to check the magazine. But again, just your thoughts, you know, about this and. Because it seems to me that this young man's life is essentially over. Yeah.
Well, obviously, it's sad you have loss of life.
Yeah.
So one young man's life is definitely over. And then you have the sadness of another young man who clearly, and even the state sees it this way, the Commonwealth, being charged with involuntary manslaughter, that he did not intend to harm or kill his friend or his colleague. That said, though, as you articulated, Harold, the way he handled the weapon, his condition, based on the allegations, his condition being maybe under the influence of alcohol, using the weapon apparently in some type of game or whatever they may have been doing, the law would find that to be reckless, at minimally negligent, but potentially reckless, which will then define or what the level of charge he will be facing, whether it's involuntary manslaughter or maybe some, I'm not sure if Commonwealth have a negligent manslaughter type of thing. I don't think it will go beyond involuntary manslaughter as a charge, but that's what's taken into account. So it wasn't a premeditation, didn't intend to do it, at least based on what they reported. It potentially would be viewed as very reckless behavior.
Yeah.
But at minimum, negligent behavior.
Bobby?
Absolutely. The other side, though, that people don't think about a lot of times, Harold, and that is the civil side of it. Now that there's the criminal side, now most of the savvy attorneys now are turning around and suing the families of the decedent. are now turning around and suing the actual perpetrator, because the standard is a lot lower. On the criminal side, the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt. And the standard for, you know, a civil verdict is a lot less.
Yeah. Finally tonight, I only have about two more minutes, but I really want to get to this one. And this is just a free-for-all. Whoever wants to jump in, class action lawsuits. If you get a card that says that you have the option to be a party to a class action lawsuit because something that you purchased isn't working, and you may not even know that whatever you purchase or stock that you've invested in, and there may be a lawsuit regarding that, are they worth it? Should you get in?
I mean, should you
be a party to
you agree to be a party to the class action?
Yes.
Well, I think one of the questions you ask yourself is, if you don't become a party to the class action, are you going to sue yourself? Because the whole, really, the base behind the class action is that multiple people have a similar or this claim against a particular entity, right? But your claim may be only worth $100, for example. You're not going to sue a big, large company for $100. But if you have a 100,000 people who have been treated the same way, now, really what you want is you want the company to be held account for what they did. And you want the company to stop doing what they did. And the only way you can get a company to do that is to do it in a class action format, because each individual litigant, the amount in controversy may be way too small.
Yeah.
So yes, you're right. You might only get a $50 check when the day is done, but it might be a million people getting a $50 check. But the reality of it is, the law firm or the lawyers who are doing a class action, they're the ones who make the money.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true. But, you know, that's just the reality of it.
I'll take $50 and put it in my gas tank. Deborah, Marlon, Bobby, thank you so much for being a part of this conversation.
Thank you, Harold. Thank you for having us.
And finally tonight, a little advice for anyone who owns, as they say, houses and lands. The day after you buy anything of significant value that you plan to keep and want to keep in the family, you need to think about drafting a will or trust. Wills are not just for older people. They are for everyone who owns something of value. Don't think you're too young for a will, because death is going to come to all of us, and we don't know when. A will means your final wishes will be carried out after you're gone, and it'll save a lot of headaches and heartaches for loved ones. Think about that. That's the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, November 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.